Start spreading the news. Listen to this.
That's what New York sounds like from the New Yorker Hotel. I'm sticking the microphone out the window. And I hope that person's okay. Is that an ambulance? Or is that a police car? Oh, I don't know.
Closing the window and sitting back in my very tiny shoebox hotel room to say welcome to On The Mic. The reason why I'm in New York is I'm shooting a movie called Robot 4 with legendary director Mark Toya. So excited to be in this film. I auditioned almost a year ago and I can't believe it's actually happening. It's a science fiction thriller and tonight I'm shooting my scene on the Brooklyn Bridge. There may be tears, there may be death, but I don't want to give away too much because you've got to see this movie when it comes out. Robot 4. Keep an ear out for it. But right now, On The Mic, welcome to the show. Thank you for subscribing and giving us a review if you've already done it. If you haven't, please do it so we can keep doing this podcast and maybe even make a contribution on patreon.com. You get exclusive footage, admission to our secret Facebook page. We may even give you tickets to events, like there's an event that I'm doing with Matt Dellavedova in Melbourne on Saturday. Yeah, got to be back in Melbourne on Saturday. Life is crazy right now. But yeah, please make a donation, be a part of the show, patreon.com/onthemic. Yep, I'll be at Amart Sports Chadston with Matt Dellavedova. He's the $38 million player with the Milwaukee Bucks. Aussie that is just doing brilliantly with the NBA. And he's out to promote his new shoe range called Deli Ones. So come on down, maybe even buy some Deli Ones, or he might sign them or give you a pair. Meet Matt Dellavedova at 11 a.m. Amart Sports Chadston in Melbourne, 1341 Malvern Road in the Chadston Shopping Centre, East Malvern. I will see you there at Amart Sports. And how good is it that the NBL are taking on the NBA? It's a testament to how brilliant our teams are in Australia. The Sydney Kings are playing the Utah Jazz in early October. And I believe Melbourne United are going to be having a game. And so, yeah, Brisbane Bullets are playing. It's interesting that the Perth Wildcats didn't get a run in against an NBA team because they just won the championship earlier this year. But it all fires up again in October. And very exciting to see that the Sydney Kings get a run and they're going over to play the Utah Jazz. The last time that anything like this happened is like 20 years ago, where I think it was actually the Perth Wildcats who got absolutely slaughtered against an NBA team. I'm not sure which one it was, but this is really exciting for the sport in Australia, and congratulations to everyone that got this deal together. Okay, right now, Mike Rowles. In September 2001, St Kilda local Mike Rowles had the world at his feet. He was in high spirits on his way to his annual football trip. Little did he know that he would be struck with meningococcal septicemia towards the end of his trip, leaving him unconscious for 5 weeks. Doctors gave him a 5% survival rate. He woke up, legs are gone, all sorts of other horrible stuff happened to him. He'll tell you all about it in his amazing story. Great sense of humor. He's a brilliant human. Recorded at Hamilton Island, this is Mike Rowles.
Check. 1, 2, 3.
On the mic.
Test.
With Mike Goldman.
Mike Rowles, here on the mic. How you doing, legend?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. It's fantastic to be here.
Hamilton Island is where we are at the moment, and if you don't know where that is and you're overseas wondering where the hell are these guys, it's in the beautiful Whitsundays in Queensland, and we're up here doing a little corporate gig for a company called Bay Audio, audiologist specialists. They're in shopping malls all over Australia and soon to be around the world where you go get your ears checked.
Sure can.
I'm the MC for the event, and Mikey Mike over here is doing like a motivational talk.
Yeah. Just telling a few stories on a Saturday night.
Man.
Yeah, good fun, absolutely.
You have got some stories, my friend, and welcome to On The Mic. That's what we're here for, to tell stories. And you get up on the mic and tell your incredible story of when you're a kid. I think it was 2001.
2001, yeah.
I believe you had the world at your feet.
Yeah, literally.
The next minute you were unconscious and diagnosed with meningococcal. Which was a shock to you when you woke up in bed. I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, so, like you said, world at my feet. Healthy, happy, 18-year-old kid, fit as a fiddle, playing footy. And we decided to go on down to a football trip in Tasmania, as you do. Enjoy the end of the season with your mates. And went off to the trip. And at some point along the line, I got sick. I got this awful bacterial disease, bacterial meningitis. And I don't even remember any of the trip at all. Basically, all I remember was getting dropped off to a buddy's house. He was taking me to the airport. Flew over to Hobart. Apparently, I had a fantastic time down there on the football trip. But at some point along the line, I got really sick. And I was too sick to fly home from the airport. Rushed to Royal Hobart Hospital. And then I slipped into a coma. And spent the next 5.5 weeks unconscious and woke up back at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne. And basically, the S had hit the fan, basically.
The shit had hit the fan. You can say shit in this podcast.
Oh, wonderful.
Even though apparently I said fuck last night when I was hosting the event.
So basically, the shit had definitely hit the fan by this point.
I didn't say fuck last night when I was hosting the event.
I think you did.
Two old dears downstairs at breakfast before at the Refew Hotel here at Hamilton Island said to Mike, and he only told me, oh, that Mike Goldman, he said fuck on stage. But the reason I did is because the fire alarm went off, because fireworks have been exploding everywhere on stage. Anyway.
Yeah, you say some funny things when you're fearing for your life. What if there was a fire?
Exactly.
That's what I thought.
I would have saved them. Get the fuck out! Hey, buddy, such an unbelievable thing to happen. And for those of the people that don't understand what meningococcal is, can you just give us a brief explanation of what it is?
I can.
And how you contract it?
Yeah, so everyone always wants to know how you contract it. And it's basically, you catch it the same way you do a regular cold, which is what makes it so terrifying for the general public.
So it's just airborne, floating around right now.
Apparently the bacteria lives on the back of the throat. 20% of the population carry the bacteria, but it only becomes active at certain times of the year. So I guess it's one of those, the moon has to align with the stars and everything like that in order for you to be susceptible. And when you get the bacteria, it starts as meningitis and then it enters the bloodstream, from what I understand, and starts to disperse throughout the body and multiply very quickly, and then it starts to coagulate your blood. So that's what causes these horrific injuries. When it starts to filter, the septic shock goes through the body, the bacteria is multiplying very quickly, and it starts to clot your extremities. Anything furthest away from the heart starts to clot very quickly. So for instance, my right leg went completely black over that 5.5 week period, and they leave things as long as they possibly can. And you can imagine, obviously, my family being completely distraught. They had to come in and tell them, well, you need to sign consent forms for Mike to have his legs amputated. Now, you can imagine that for a mother or father making that decision. Because they'd gone black and they leave them for a period of time because they want to see what comes back. So, for instance, a couple of my fingers went black, but then they came back because there was a pink tip at the end. So they leave it to the last minute, and then if it's not going to come back, they amputate, because if you leave it on there, it'll keep reinfecting you, and therefore you'll get sicker and sicker, and eventually you'll die. So it's absolutely necessary that they need to amputate, and that's what makes this meningococcal disease so very, very scary and terrifying for all parents and anyone for that matter in the general public, because it's really indiscriminate. It can affect anybody.
Is it still in your system?
No, not at all. So once they give you the antibiotics, it kills the bacteria, and then you. One of the first questions I asked when I woke up, because I'm like, can you catch it again? I don't know why, but that was one thing that came to my mind. I'm like, geez, I feel like absolute shit. I hope this doesn't happen again.
Because you were saying something the other day about 20% of people have it, or it's at the back of the throat.
Carriers. So apparently, these are all technical. Like, you'd be better off. I mean, doctors would be able to answer this. So there's people, doctors probably out there going, that's not how it happens. But, you know, I'm not a doctor, but all I know of it and, you know, what I've learned and read about it, it lives on the back of a percentage of the population's throat. And then they can pass it on through kissing or through sharing drinks, sharing cigarettes, coughing, someone breathes in, those sorts of things. They don't really know. They can't pinpoint the moment that I've got it, but I can imagine being on a football trip. God knows what was going on. So,
There's a couple of versions of it, though. One of which that we do get immunization in Australia for.
Yes.
But there's the one that you got that it isn't standard to get immunized against.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation, because at the moment there's a lady in Sydney that I do a bit of work with, Eliza O'Connell, and she works for Meningococcal Australia, and she's lobbying to get the vaccinations mandatory across the board. But the problem with it is I got meningococcal C. Now, meningococcal C is now part of the National Vaccine Register. And last year, there was only 5 cases of meningococcal C, which is tiny. But the problem is now there's different strains. So there's meningococcal W, X, and I think there might be A as well. And there's a number of them. So if you've got to get individually vaccinated for each. Now, that's a real problem if you've got a number of kids and the vaccinations are expensive. So that's why Eliza's doing some wonderful work and trying to get it on the register. So
how much of a chance is there of getting it if you're not immunised? Like, so one in 1,000, no, 1,000,000, 10,000,000?
Yeah, it's one. It's basically, I think, I looked at some statistics from, I think it was 2015, 222 people got the disease across Australia. And of that number, only 12% got seriously ill or lost limbs like I did. Or died. So it's around a 1 in 1,000,000 chance, really, to get really sick and die from it. But they do often, if you get it early and they deliver antibiotics, you can get rid of it.
But we get immunised against smallpox.
Everything, yeah.
And the last smallpox case, I believe, was in Africa in like the early 70s.
Yep.
But we still get immunised against that.
I think maybe because there's a lot more of a prevalence in terms of how many people get it. Now, you can imagine the government saying, well, okay, 222 people out of 26 million or whatever we've got in this country get the disease a year. Is it worth putting that on? Well, I would say yes, because you look at what it does to people and what it can do to families and destroy. You know, I've spoken to people that have lost people from meningococcal, and, you know, people never get over that. And it, and being in Australia, in a very privileged country, just get it on, because they don't, you don't, no one should have to go through life with, you know, no limbs. And I've met people, plenty of people for that matter. There's a group of people I've met that are in this thing called the Quad Squad. They've got no arms and no legs from it. You know,
Quad Squad.
Quad Squad, that's what they call themselves. You know,
sounds like a movie.
Yeah, exactly. But they've got two prosthetic arms and two prosthetic legs. And it's all from bacterial meningitis, pneumococcal, those sorts of diseases.
And what are those guys like?
They're amazing, amazing people, yeah. And, and I've met them at an amputee expo recently, and one called Corinne Barrett, she's done the, she lives in Brisbane, so I think she did the, there's some sort of marathon up there where they go across the bridge, and she did that. She's a wonderful person, but, you know, the way that it affects you and the injuries that you're left with, not just externally, but internally as well, is horrific. And and if there's a way we can stop it, which there is, then that should be the norm in Australia.
Is it the norm in any other countries?
It is. Apparently they're bringing it. This is all, again, this is the stuff that you need. Eliza would be the best person to speak to on this. But from what I know, they have brought it into, I think, the UK, Germany, and some parts of Scandinavia have brought it on as mandatory, particularly the W, which is particularly deadly. People have, you know, that's become more prevalent. That's gone from C being the normal one. Now W has become the one that people are starting to catch. And unfortunately, it affects kids. Oh, there's like, I don't know, one for every letter, probably. I don't know. No, what? There's I think there's the ones I know of. I had C, meningococcal C, and then there's W, and I think there's X, and I know A is there too. But there's certain strains that are more prevalent than others.
All right, let's start talking about the disease.
Pretty heavy. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Rolls.
No worries.
For giving
at all.
Us all that information, because I mean, it's good to sort of get a basic understanding of what it is and where it comes from and how you contract it, so we can get a snapshot of your life and what you've been doing since you've become a double amputee and the lives that you've been changing and how you've been using that as a positive in your life rather than a negative. Like last night, you got up on stage here at the what was the yacht club? The brand new amazing yacht club here at Hamilton Island.
But it's a wonderful venue.
The Bommy, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And it's such an incredible place. There's a sailboat called Wild Oats 11 that won one of the biggest yachting races here in Australia many, many times, called the Sydney to Hobart. And they've got it cut up into pieces and put all over this Bommy, over this big yacht club. And it's incredible. And Mike got up and did a talk for about an hour last night about what basically talked us through the disease, like you just told us some of that. And then
Life beyond, really.
Yeah, and going through the journey and with your parents having to make those horrible decisions, like, do we cut off his leg? Do we cut off his fingers? Signing the forms to be able to do that. And how was it starting off as a kid when your parents were first taking you home for those first initial days? What was going through your mind then?
Well, it was a six-month stay in hospital. So getting me home, I was still, you know, just a bag of bones. I went from 80 kilos down to 47 kilos at my sickest. So, well, you know, like we said, physical injuries, external injuries are bad, but internal injuries too, my whole guts were ruined. You know, everything starts to shut down. So I'm being fed through this tube, only starting to eat food. Everything I'd eat, I'd bring up, you know, like I wasn't keeping anything down, couldn't put any weight on. So the pain factor was just enormous. And then it was all about, you know, everything when any crisis happens in anyone's life, everything gets put on hold. You know, nothing else matters. You know, we tend to worry in everyday life about our job and, oh, you know, someone said something bad about me, all these sorts of things, these trivial things in our life that we worry about. But when something serious happens, that all goes out the window. And the only things that really matter then are your family and the people that matter most and getting things better. And that's what my whole family shifted from being, you know, just a regular run-of-the-mill, awesome family. I've got a wonderful family.
Yeah.
But then our whole lives were turned upside down. Then it was just all a matter of, you know, everyone banded together and everyone pitched in. You know, everyone was helping with, you know, taking me to and from rehab, getting my, you know, helping me with meals and things like that, because at that point I was basically useless, mate.
Mm. And where did the positivity come from to help you get back on your new legs and get up there and learn to walk properly?
I think just having a real zest for life. You know, I wasn't done living at that point in time. I wasn't sitting there and saying, well, this means my life's over. It's like, well, okay, well, it could have been worse. I could have lost my arms, for instance.
Mm.
And I think the positivity and also there was a real sense of, okay, well, look how much my family has done for me and they've banded together. I owe it to them in some ways as well to go, okay, well, I'm going to make the best of the situation. Let's move on. Let's move forward. And learning about prosthetic legs, and it was a step-by-step process. So it went from, you know, a huge goal was sitting on the side of the bed without throwing up. That was a big goal. That was my number one objective at one point in time. Then that moves from, okay, well, now it's getting to and from bed to a wheelchair and wheelchair to a bed. That became the second goal. So it's baby steps, really. And then it was getting a leg on, being able to walk, till eventually it was like, okay, well, now reconnect socially. You know, there was all this process that I had to go on and make baby goals, because if I sit there and I'm lying in the hospital bed and I'm thinking, well, I'm probably never going to run again, all of a sudden your motivation disappears.
Who helps you make those baby goals, as you call them?
I think it was internal, and I think, you know, when you're being advised by physios and they're telling you, you know, one step at a time, one day at a time, that helps as well.
Yeah.
But having realistic and achievable goals is a really important thing to do, because you can't just, you know, set the bar too high, because you'll never reach it, and it's very demotivating.
Mm.
So it was just a matter of step by step, and eventually one thing turned into another, and I was able to do some things that, you know, I was really proud of doing, you know, being able to get back to a relatively normal life and being happy, I guess you could say.
How do you drag yourself out of, like, the depression stage where you must have had some dark moments?
Absolutely. You know, I would be an absolute liar if I sat there and go, yeah, I didn't have any bad days. It was all fun and games. Mum would come in, I'd crack jokes. That wasn't the case. There was days where I wanted to, you know, throw my breakfast tray at the nurse when she came in. You know, there was times I remember one time... It's funny, I went to Caulfield Rehab and I got... this became a lot of, you know, joke fodder and everything like that. But I was roomed next to a fella named Ron, and he had an intellectual disability. And I feel terrible now talking about this, but he'd come in and he would always talk to me every single day. And I wasn't really in the right frame of mind to have the Ron experience at that point in time. And he'd come in and he'd go, hello, like this. How are you? Like this all day. And he was I wish I could meet him now.
His heart's in the right place.
But at the time and in that frame of mind, yeah, his heart was in the right place. Yeah. And it would bug me. And we'd share a bathroom. I'd hear him in the shower, in the toilet all night.
Yeah.
And I really didn't have a lot of tolerance at that point in time. And I feel terrible now thinking back to that. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I was going through my own thing. And I thought, you know, that was a really... tough situation, and he'd come in, like, my parents would be there, or I'd have a visitor from one of my mates, and he'd just wheel himself in his wheelchair and he'd be like, what's your name, what are you doing, like this, and he'd talk to everyone, and I'd be like, oh, can you go away, type thing.
Thinking back, that probably broke your chain of thought, and if you were in a bad way, it sort of took the focus off you to something else that was going on, I guess.
Like, there was just so much going on. It was like, okay, well, what do I... You know, day to day, it was in this... You went from this state-of-the-art Alfred Hospital to Caulfield. Now, it's not a fantastic place. The ward was built, you know, after World War One to house returning soldiers.
What? And so they haven't fixed it up since
then?
Well,
they kind of have, but at the same time, the amputee ward was brand new. So when I got up to rehab, it was fantastic. Everything was, like, spiffy. You know, you'd go there and you'd be doing your rehab. Then you'd go to this massive... long cold tunnel called the Breezeway, where you'd get wheeled down back to the ward, and you'd basically just start sobbing on the way down and go, no, don't take me back, I don't want to go here, you know, this is what would happen. And then you'd go in there, and then at one point I had to share a room with four other guys. One of the guys was, you know, an alcoholic, and I'm thinking, like, how did I get here? 18 years old, running around a football field, trying to chase, you know, girls, have lots of fun, with all my friends, and now I'm stuck in a rehab ward with people that had lost their legs from, you know, diabetes, older people. One guy was, you know, he would have been in his 90s, and how did I get here? Where did this, you know, how did this situation even happen? So keeping a positive frame of mind in that period, the only thing I think that kept me positive was, hey, I need to get myself up and moving so I can get the hell out of here.
And you
home.
Did.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, fast forward to today. You're traveling around Australia and the world, and you're getting up and doing these amazing talks about your life. And what would you say the focus is on your talk? Last night I got from it that it's, you know, in the face of adversity, turning your life around and focusing on the positive. But from your perspective, what do you feel like it's doing for people?
I think
getting up and doing your thing.
I think my point of difference is certainly around the whole idea that when we, you know, getting rid of these negative things that exist in our lives. Mm. And as I said, you know, my initial injuries, I lost my right leg and my half of my left foot, and I kept that leg for around about 8 years, and it was something that was stopping me from moving on completely. I had still had a wound on the foot, and I'd dress it and all this sort of stuff, mate. It was a pain in the ass, and it used to stop me from doing things I wanted to do. Every time I'd do anything strenuous, it would mean that I'd spend a couple of days waiting for this foot to heal, and then it would break down again, sometimes get infected. It was a real nightmare, and I guess that's what I encourage people to do, and getting people to relate to something that's one in a million. And really, you know, people can't sit there and go, wow, and wonder, you know, I can understand what Mike went through. It's a really out of this world scenario to get really sick like I did. So getting them to relate to it in their own lives, it's like, well, okay, well, I amputated my left leg 9 years on, and I was able to do some great things as a result of that. So therefore, the message is, go out there and make really tough decisions, get rid of the things that are holding you back, and don't just leave things and accept things as they are in your life. So that's where my point of difference is. It's like, amputate the dead weight that exists in your life in order to move on and create a better future and a better life for yourself.
So what was that like when you had one leg amputated and the other one you were thinking about whether you should cut it off or not? Like, how do you make that decision yourself?
Well, it's interesting. I when they originally did it, they just said, look, Mike's so sick, let's just... it was a guillotine chop through the middle of the arch of the foot. So it was just left as is. They put a skin graft over it, and they said, look, he's going to maybe have to do something about that in a little while. Let's just focus on getting him better because he's so sick at this moment. So what happened up with that, it kind of just was this loose end that we had, that I had, that I was dealing with. And I didn't, as you can imagine, didn't really want to jump back into a hospital bed, mate. You know, it wasn't exactly the first thing. Yeah, okay, 6 months. Yeah, let's do that. That sounds great. More surgery.
Just go back and do the other
leg. So I kind of just got on with things the best I could. And I didn't realize how destructive it had become. And then eventually I got diagnosed with a bone infection in that foot. And that really pushed me over the edge. That was like, okay, it's 9 years on. I've recovered. I think, you know, I needed those 9 years in some ways, but I look back now and I always say to people, geez, I wish I'd have done it sooner. Maybe I wasn't ready to do it sooner. Maybe it did take that time to come to that tough decision. And I did my research. I identified how much it was costing me in my life. And I said, look, I'm, you know, I'll be damned in 5 years if this is still the situation. So I took some really definitive action and decisive action, and an action that I guess people would question me on. Family, friends would say, wait, you know, maybe you should try something else. Why don't you try and do something where you can try and save the foot? I'd been there and done that. That was
you've been to hell and
no
back.
Way,
you've
no
lost
way.
A leg already.
Absolutely. Like, and
I
guess,
do it again?
Well, I guess here's another thing. I knew what it was like to be a baloney amputee.
Yeah.
So I could say, oh, well, I know my right leg is my good leg. I know how it is. I know what it takes to wear a leg and to use a leg properly. So I had that benefit. So I'm like, you know what, chop it off. And it wasn't an easy thing. It was a really intensive operation. But eventually, once I got up and had a leg on, I had a shrinker on. I had 74 stitches in the leg. So it was a crazy, you know, huge operation. They did a complete reconstruction of the limb. And once I got the stitches out, I put the shrinker on, was able to get a leg fitted. And then when I was up and away, I was basically pain-free. And once I built that quadricep, which had wasted a little bit on the left side, I was able to do some amazing things and really move on with my life in a totally different setting than previously.
How long did it take you to be able to walk on two?
Not long at all.
Of the legs?
Pretty much straight away. As soon as I was able to fit the leg, stand on the leg, and then use it with crutches, eventually I was just like, yep, I'm off and away. And then it was an amazing feeling. And it was probably the best, in terms of my recovery, that was the best thing I've ever done in my recovery. And I was able to, you know, be balanced, pain-free relatively, didn't have to dress. I was able to get back in the water because I wasn't allowed to swim for those many years. Because if you go into a public swimming pool, you can't really, you know, use them because I had an open wound and there was a big risk of infection.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't really do any swimming. So that was, you know, that was a great thing.
But now you can. You've got your merman flippers.
Yeah, absolutely. Had some.
I saw a photo last night as a part of your show. You're showing all your different legs there. You've got eight legs that you use, Spider-Man. And you've also got these massive fins.
Yeah, so...
What was that like, being a merman? Was that one of your dreams come true?
Yeah, it was always, you know, I never really met a mermaid when I was out there and about. And all the people up here in Hamilton Island went on the reef trip and I chucked in the old... Did anyone see me out there? I was a merman swimming around. But I get to actually swim faster than I did prior when I used to have my feet. So,
of course.
Because as you can imagine, I can kick my little stump legs when I've got them on really, really quickly. And I guess there's always this thing for amputees where they make you a swimming leg where you've got this foot does this amazing thing where it points, right?
Yeah.
And then you put a flipper on it, but then you're dragging this heavy thing in the water and it doesn't really work.
No.
So I spoke to my prosthetist. I'm like, hey, listen, I just want to get something malleable. So it's like a rubber socket type material. And I want to turn it just into a flipper. I don't want feet. So I go to the water's edge, put these things on, and away I go, and I'm equal both sides and I can kick really fast. Get back to doing surfing, scuba diving, swimming, all those sorts of things, and really, you know, improve your fitness. Because one of the great things about, you know, you can have running legs, and in terms of cardio, getting in the water, you're not weight bearing, so it's a wonderful thing for amputees to be in the water.
The technology is amazing, and it's come such a long way. I mean, you mentioned Caulfield; they've got the same facility that they've had since the '60s.
Yeah, yep.
And you look at them now. I was a stadium announcer at the Paralympic Games in Sydney 2000, and I was talking to a few of the athletes and about the technology and how it's just coming along in leaps and bounds, and eventually they're going to be running faster than the people with actual real legs. Tell us a bit about the technology that you've got in these things and how well they work, because you walk around like you wouldn't even notice you in a crowd, because it's not like you've sort of got this weird
limp or
galloping
like
limpy thing. Like you walk like there's nothing wrong.
Well, the technology, I worked with a guy for 6 months and I used to always wear long pants, and he had no idea I was an amputee until I told him, and he's like, get out of town. I'm like, no, I honestly don't have any legs. And he's like, yes, you do. He goes, he thought I was having a joke, and I showed him and he nearly fell off his chair. He's like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. And then started wearing shorts, and I wear shorts all the time now, so I wander around. But the technology from 2001 even, and when you would have experienced and had been around other amputees, has just come in leaps and bounds.
Mm.
These legs here I got 3 months ago, and they're the latest reflex rotates from a company called Ossa, which is an Icelandic company. And they retail, like, they're about $12,000 each leg to set up. But the way I can walk is really, these are the state-of-the-art, the best legs for balloonies at the moment. But there's also a catch to that. You can't just get a leg and say, yeah, I'm going to walk fantastic. You've got to work on it too. So it's all about core strength, making sure your quads are up and going, and your hip strength and all that sort of stuff is in alignment.
Mm.
So I work hard in the gym in terms of my core to give me the best gait and the best ability to walk.
How often do you do that? How often do you hit the gym?
About 3 days a week I try and get to the gym.
Mm.
Any more than that, I tend to get pretty sore. I don't lift really heavy weights. I lift light weights but high reps. And make sure that I just want to I go to the gym for functionality. I don't go there to, you know, flex biceps, because I don't have any biceps really.
And so sit-ups, chin-ups, what kind of
sit-ups?
Stuff?
I do a lot of stuff with pulleys. So I go across, and I play a lot of golf as well. So it helps me, you know, with my golf, pulling from different anchor points.
Mm.
And then that rotation around the core exercise. I do a lot of planking, things like that. So just basically the more I do, the better I walk.
Mm.
So it's a really important thing. You know, you've got to combine good technology, but you've also got to be able to use it correctly too.
And how's your golf?
Golf's fantastic. Got down to handicap of 6, so it's better than when I actually had legs. So that was the one thing that I was able to.
That's it. I'm cutting off my legs. Yeah. I want to get better at golf.
Absolutely. If you're out there, I've got a good surgeon that you can actually.
Oh shit! Bad joke.
So one of the things with golf is it's all of a sudden, when I was playing football and active sports and contact sports, that was out the window. So you can choose to sob and moan and bitch about that and say, "Well, I'm never going to be able to do that again," or I can put all my competitive juices and energies into something that I can still do.
Mm.
And my dad really, you know, proved that to me, where he took me out and he forced me to basically hit the ball and say, yeah, you can still do it.
How did he do that?
He just took me down and basically was encouraging me in a very early stage to take me down to the golf course where, you know, we played a lot of golf Had some great memories.
When you were a kid.
Yeah, when I was a kid. And
that was probably part of your rehabilitation, by getting you back out on the course to remind you of how much fun it was.
And it meant a lot to him, right? It was just something like he would have had these questions when I got sick. He was like, you know, I wonder if Mike's ever going to be able to do this again. Is he ever going to be able to, you know, have a family? You know, what's it going to be like? How's his mental state? All these questions. And that's sort of something that he was probably a bit fearful of, because I was so active and I relied on my feet so much in my life. Now, all of a sudden, they're gone. So all these questions would have been in his head. So he really just pushed me, and we went down the golf course and I had a hit and he dropped me flat on my face, but that wasn't really the point.
What?
Yeah, he actually...
How come he dropped you on your face?
So he promised me he'd hold me at the hips, and I got up and I was balanced and I swung back and I swung the ball and I hit it so well, he was just completely distracted watching the ball. Completely forgot to hold me and I fell flat on my face in the middle of the fairway.
Oh, no!
I didn't hurt myself, which was okay, but it really... It gave me the ability to say, wow, okay, I can still hit the golf ball pretty good. So I focused all my attention, my energy, my competitive drive into golf, and being able to get back to a really, really good level, which I love. And
do you use the same legs for golf?
Different legs. These? So recently when I got these, they may be an inch and a half taller, so that completely stuffed me with the new clubs that I had set up.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Why did they make you taller?
Not really sure. Just went back there and they were like, you know, and then I put the other legs on and I felt like I'd shrunk a little bit, and I'm like, I'm definitely taller. Everyone, I'm walking around, they're going, are you grown a bit? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I have. Yeah, it can be as tall or as short as you want, really.
Yeah.
So that's one of the benefits, one of the perks that you can, you know, there's always going to be benefits.
Works well with the ladies. They like taller men.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what's the difference in the golfing legs?
So the golfing legs are just my old legs. So the legs. It's kind of like, okay, best way to describe it is when you come home from, you know, a long day and you've been on your feet all day and you jump into your moccasins, for instance, right?
Oh.
Yeah, something more, a bit more comfortable.
Right.
It's a little bit like that. So when I go on the old legs, they're really comfortable. They're not as rigid as the ones I've got now. And I kind of feel like I'm in this really comfortable old pair of trusty runners that I once had. And that's what it's like when I'm swinging the golf club. I'm used to every single little bit of, you know, the way I transfer my weight and every nook and cranny in the sockets and the way they feel. I'm used to that when I'm swinging a golf club. And these ones are completely different to that. So I use those legs. Now I travel everywhere in my car. And whenever I want to have a hit of golf, I just pop those legs on. And saves me having to change the old boots over, mate. And I've got the...
What's your handicap now?
Six.
Six?
Yeah, six.
Mine's,
it's going
mine's
out
about
bit, yeah.
25.
Yeah, well, that's not too bad.
Hopeless.
Nah, that's not hopeless. There's there's days when I shoot 25 over. I can promise you. It's not always that low. I'm starting to drift out a bit now, which is, you know, I think due to the bit of everything. Cold weather's not very good, because when I played last Sunday, went down for a game with a buddy of mine. I had the worst freaking morning ever.
Yeah.
Stopped at the red light, waiting for it to turn green, and an Uber driver smashes straight up the back of me
about
40 k's an hour. Yeah, and that was 6 in the morning. It was 3 degrees in Melbourne. I'm thinking to myself, why did I even get out of bed this morning?
So it's
pulled
his fault.
Over. Yeah, we pulled over to the side of the road and then got details. And he had this guy in the back of his Uber had come. He just finished a massive night. This guy, and he was like really flamboyant sort of character. And he's going, "Oh my god!" He goes, "This guy, he's just crashed in the back of you. He wasn't even fucking watching." And he goes, "What are you doing?" And then he goes, "He doesn't even ask me. My neck sore. Call 000. My neck sore. Take me to the hospital." And the guy's just like, you know, completely
really?
Not engaging. And I just swapped details, and he was getting kind of heated. And I'm like, "Oh look, you know, swapped details. Got everything I needed." Then I left, and obviously being a bit flustered, I've gone in, turned around, started heading south on St Kilda Road, and then I've gone like 72 kilometres through the camera, bang, flashed.
Oh,
so I got a speeding fine as well. It was the worst start to the day. I got to the first tee, I was in the worst state, like it was like, oh, I really should just go home, and there was frost on the fairway, so your ball was crunching as it was actually hitting.
Don't tell me you slipped
freezing
over.
Cold. No, I didn't slip over. But by the third hole, I literally couldn't feel my arm. So I'd become a quadruple amputee, basically. Couldn't even grip the club, nothing at all. So no limbs, just this frozen icicle trying to get around this golf course. And it certainly wasn't the best performance that I'd ever put in.
Do you drive with these legs, or do you actually use hand things on the steering wheel?
So my only restriction is I've got to drive an auto. I can't use the clutch.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as I got sick, that was something that was very, very liberating, was being able to move around and freely and go wherever I wanted, because I was stuck in the one spot for a long period of time. So I just had to reset my license, prove to them that I was safe, and away I went.
Mm. So you're traveling around Australia, the world, doing these lectures, getting up, telling your life story and, you know, how to overcome obstacles in your life. What are some of the experiences you've had with people in the audience coming up to you after the show, or helping other people in their lives to overcome horrible things that have happened to them?
One of the most flattering things, and something that I'm always grateful for, is what people are willing to share with you. Mm. You know, people tell me some incredible things that they wouldn't normally say, but because you're up there and you're sharing a part of you, people feel maybe a trust and a connection with you. Mm. So they come and they just lay it on you. You know, they say, you know, they tell you sometimes the most horrendous things that you're like, wow, you know, that's amazing. And I had an incident the other day, which was quite terrible. I felt almost a little bit guilty. I was in the crowd, and as I was explaining my story, there was a gentleman that was nodding his head, and he'd come up to me afterwards, and he was very emotional, and he said that, you know, he had experienced meningococcal, where he lost his son at the age of 15 from it.
Whoa.
And that was a really tough sort of situation. But there's also anyone who knows an amputee, they straight away come to you and go, my uncle's an amputee. And I'm like, oh, I might have met him. Yeah. So apparently we all, you know, that's a sort of...
It's like you're French. Do you know my friend Francois?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, same thing. Blonde person saying, oh, yeah, my cousin's blonde. It's like, I don't really identify with other amputees. And that sounds funny, but I don't particularly say, oh, that guy's an amputee, I want to be mates with him. What I do is identify with attitude, and I surround myself with people that have got brilliant attitudes in the face of adversity. One of my best mates, Chance, he's a quadriplegic, an incomplete quadriplegic, and he walks. And he is the most inspirational, the most positive guy you've ever met. So he gets around, walks, can't feel anything below his neck. He can like pinch himself and all this sort of stuff.
How does he walk?
So he's what's called an incomplete quadriplegic. So he had a terrible accident where he dived into a pool and broke his neck.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a really horrific stuff. But his attitude is something I'm drawn to, because you never hear the guy complain. It's ridiculous. Like, he's the nicest bloke you'd ever meet. Never has a bad word to say about anyone. And then another mate of mine, Ben, a really good friend, he went blind overnight at the age of 16. And he's, again, just super positive. And that's what I'm drawn to. It's that energy of guys that are just like, hey, you don't sit there and go, oh, you know, I don't have any bloody feet, whatever it is. Like, you know, don't dwell on those situations. You just got to move on. Just got to keep moving on and be positive. And
is there anyone that's been in the same situation as you that they've asked you to go and talk to?
Yeah, so I do a lot of work with Limbs for Life, which is a peer support program. And it's set up for amputees, in particular new amputees, and how to deal and adapt and to cope, and what the actual end goal is for amputees from the moment they have their amputation and what's beyond that. So I go and speak to, a lot of the time they get me to go and speak to the younger crowd. So it could be trauma. Another fella that I'm speaking to and mentoring at the moment's about to have his leg taken off. He's not an amputee yet, but he's had 10 years of suffering with this, trying to save this leg, and now he's come to the solution that he's going to be better off without it. So helping people through that process. No, I didn't. No, I'd never ever go in and say, mate, you should chop your leg off. Even if I might think that, I would never ever use those words or say that to somebody. The only thing I can really do is to give them a perspective and say, hey, this is my life. This is how I go. You have to make your own decisions. And the pain that he is in when he walks is hard. You know when you watch someone and they're in pain?
Yeah.
It makes you feel that pain and you feel sore watching it. Like, you know, when someone has a limp, you kind of wince as you're watching them walk. And that's kind of what it's like for him. And I just provide a bit of an end goal. And if that's something that if that's a decision he ends up making, I'll be there with him, helping him through that process and what's beyond that. And I also try and look for, you know, how are they going to cope with their, you know, attitude and the way their outlook is. This guy is already got that in spades. He's really positive, you know, really great smile, great outlook. But this injury that he's had has been beating him down for a lot of years, and I just think that he'll be shooting for the stars if that's the path that he chooses to take.
What about working with kids who have been in the same situation or dealing with horrible stuff like this?
Yeah, that's always really confronting. And again, a young fella I met in the children's hospital through the peer support program had lost all his limbs, and that's a really tough thing to see. And where to from here, and just the smile on his face and what his family had been through. It's just such an injustice. You know, through no fault of his own, this terrible disease has... And it was something different to meningococcal, but the same sort of outcome. And then there was another fellow, a little fellow I met the other week, who's about to have both his legs taken off, you know, at 2 years old.
Jesus.
I mean, imagine that. That's just... I mean, the only thing I can say about that is, you know, kids are very, very adaptive. And adaptable, sorry. They get on with things, and you only have to go to the OSSA mobility clinics, and you're surrounded by little kids running around with prosthetic legs, and you're just like, wow, blows you away. You know, they just get on with things. There's no complaints. They try everything. They fall over. They get up straight away and they keep going.
Yeah.
It's really inspiring.
That's got a lot to do with the elasticity of the brain. And when you're really young and, you know, you're learning to ride a bike and you're learning to do new things, kick a football. And
there's no scarring.
It's like when sometimes when there's a problem with pregnancy and the baby might have a stroke or a heart attack, it doesn't affect it as much as it would say, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-old man, because their neuro patterns are still growing and working out how to walk and talk and do all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's the same with kids that lose their legs at such an early age.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest challenge that they face, unfortunately, is that they grow so quickly and they've got to continually get new legs all the time. So it gets really expensive for their parents. You know, that's a tough thing, isn't it? You know, you've got a friend of mine, Don Elgin, who's a Paralympian. When he speaks, he brings his first leg that he ever had, and it's his tiny little baby wooden leg, and then he's got them positioned one after the other and shows how many legs he had as he grew. So I was in some ways I was fairly lucky. You know, when it comes to the prosthetics, I've stopped growing. So I've had legs and I've only have to replace them maybe every 6 to 8 years, and I get some wonderful help from the people at OSSA who give me the best available legs and help me to be as active as I possibly can be.
Are they like a sponsor for you?
I'm an ambassador for them. I like to promote their products every chance I get. So they're wonderful people, wonderful organization, and the products that what they do for amputees is you know, priceless. It really is.
And so you don't just make your living from traveling around doing speaking tours. Didn't you have a gym or something like that?
So I was in the fitness industry for a little while, and now I mentor, facilitate workshops, speaking, those sorts of things. So I've moved into that space. I'm writing a book at the moment as well.
Oh, cool.
Which is coming out at the start of next year.
What's the book about?
It's about amputating dead weight. So it's about freeing yourself up from those negatives in your life, actively getting out there, removing those in order to create a better life and a life of more freedom and greater freedom. So it's that in a nutshell, and it's been a really interesting experience writing. You know, you've got to go really deep into the topic, and I'm looking forward to where that'll sort of lead and what other ways I can help the community and help first of all amputees, but also other people that are struggling with challenge and overcoming things in their life.
So what do you think is the number one way to help people with just their general problems that in life, like someone might be having a angry boss they're dealing with at work, or they might be having problems in their relationship? I mean, you're talking about all the things that you've been through and sort of giving them the reasons you got through it to help them through their problems. What would be the number one way that you tell people to just don't sweat the small stuff?
Don't sweat the small stuff's a really important thing, to be really clear on what you value and not waste time and energy worrying about the things that don't really matter to you. I mean, that's a really easy thing for somebody to say, but it's so true. Like, what really matters to you in your life? If you get clear on the things that are most important to you and put all your time and energy on those things, you can really go to a different level. And it's one of those things where, you know, you've got all types of different situations. And one of the things that I find is really frustrating, and something that I've adopted myself in my life since I took that leg off, I've done that again with other things in my life, you know, whether they're toxic friendships, something that's holding me back and something that's a really negative influence. Sometimes
it's hard to let go, though, being a human. It's like,
but that's how you grow.
Hold on to stuff, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. You can hold on to things, but at the same time, you've got to really calculate it and say, well, have I outgrown this? Have I turned? Am I the same person? You know, you've got friends from school or those sorts of things, but do you still have things in common, and are they the most important things to you? So it's really getting clear around what you value the most in your life and making sure that if there's anything at all that's standing in the way from you contributing and being the best person for those people in your life, then it's time to address it. And sitting by and letting things go, you know, just
cutting
just,
off the dead weight.
Just tumble along as per normal isn't going to help you. And eventually, you know, you can get yourself into a bit of a situation where you do hit a crisis point where you're like, okay, I've known this problem has been there for a number of years and I've left it there. Now it's turned into something that's become bigger than it should be. So
a lot of people would just let those problems hang around through their life, but you and everything you've been through, you'd be like, right, that's it.
Yep, absolutely.
You wouldn't want to piss you off being your friend. You'd be like, no, it's bad luck, mate, see you later. Ted, wait, bang, gone.
Yeah, I know, it sounds like that, but at the same time, I totally agree. It's not like sitting there going, well, you know, this guy is a very unforgiving guy.
Ruthless.
Yeah, it's not, but sometimes with certain things in your life, you do have to be ruthless.
Yeah.
You really do. I'm not saying that can be friendships, but if, for instance, instance, if you've got a problem with you know, a friendship, and every time that person calls you, you know, when you call, someone calls you on the phone, you're like, oh, you know, roll your eyes, I don't want to talk to this person.
All they do is sit there and talk about themselves for half an hour.
It's a negative thing. Yeah. Then instead of just letting that go by and saying, oh, you know, oh, it's so-and-so again, and not bring it up, address things. That's a really important thing. That's the message. Mm. Address it and say, hey, listen, you know, every time you call me, you know, amputating the dead weight could be amputating the actual feeling of getting, so address the situation and what's happening at the time. You know, every time you call me, you reel off about 6 problems that are in your life, and it's really starting to get me down as energy, and I'd really like to talk about other things or maybe something more positive. So just bring it up, you know, address it, and therefore
and
it can improve.
Will go, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but that's
rather
right.
Than getting off the phone and bitching
but
about
how
it.
Do people, how on earth can people change if they're not aware of the situation? So it's bringing things into conscious awareness and then being able to change them, and that's the way we do it.
Can we just have 5 minutes?
They're probably in my room just chucking my stuff out the door right now.
So we were supposed to be checked out of the hotel about an hour ago, but you know, it's Sunday. You know, surely they can just give us another 10 minutes to our podcast.
I reckon I'll just worst case scenario, I'll just take my legs off and crawl down to the hotel. So look, I couldn't get there in time. You know, we'll get away with it somehow. We'll come up with a plan.
Do you ever use that to your advantage and get away with it? Like, oh
yeah, you know what?
Like getting in front of the queues at rides.
That sort of thing. You know what? I don't do it at rides. I've had all sorts of fantastic situations where, you know, with blue spots, parking spots, I don't typically use them. But when I do use them, because I'm sore or I've got, you know, ingrown hairs, things like that, and I need to use them, I've had people vandalize my car before, all sorts of stuff, because I don't look like I've got a disability.
No.
Yeah, people have spat on my car, all sorts of stuff. It's crazy. Absolutely, yeah. And the number one rule with that is, here's a little tip for everybody out there. If someone has a sticker, shut your freaking mouth. You know, like, they don't question it, because you don't know what someone's going through, whether they've got a heart condition or whatever it is. It's just one of those things. If they've got a sticker, just bite your tongue. And I do have a sticker. But anyways, what was the question you asked a second ago?
Do you ever get away with things like, you know, do you ever use your disability to your advantage?
Absolutely. Yeah. I won't lie about that. So the time that I do use it and I have to use it is, you know, obviously travel can be pretty taxing, and especially long, you know, international travel. Recently went to America, and my partner and I, you know, get to the point where I'm wearing shorts, and they say, would you like to come in this queue? And I do take that opportunity to do that, because I've got some fierce pain going on being stuck, cooped up in a plane. And if there's an expressway and I can get through customs quicker, then I don't mind it. Yeah, absolutely.
Why not? I would too.
Yeah.
Definitely. And get you into a concert and get you up in a better area.
Yeah, so one of my main, you know, this is going back a little bit, but my most, one of my idols, I guess you could say, is Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. Oh, and I love Pearl Jam's music, and he came and did a solo tour. Mm. And we were sitting at the Palace Theatre in Melbourne. And the usher came along, and I kind of like made myself look a little bit more cramped than I actually was, and I had my legs out like this, and then she walked past, and I'm like, look, is there any way? Do you have any more little bit more leg room, so to speak? Even though I've got no legs, and she's like, oh, sure, sir. So she took me down the front, and I got third row back from the front.
Oh,
Eddie Vedder
wow.
in the solo tour, and I was like, you little ripper!
Why the bloody hell
was worthwhile,
not.
Right?
Yeah. This is really horrible. I probably shouldn't be admitting this, but I actually pretended once that I had a disability.
What did you do? Tell me the story.
This is kind of like a confessional for me right now, because I was the official announcer at the Paralympic Games, Sydney 2000, and it was the closing ceremony, and I was up in my announcer's box, and I drank most of a bottle of Galliano Zambuca with a few of the other people who'd worked right through the Olympic Games. And the Paralympic Games, Kylie Minogue was on the stage, and all of the athletes, the Paralympians, were in the middle of the field. And I thought, that looks like fun down there. I've got to get down there. And so
I
limped onto the field.
Oh, you're kidding me. You had a limp.
I just limped. I made up a limp. So I could get onto the field and watch Kylie Minogue on stage. And I may or may not have kissed a Canadian girl in a wheelchair.
Oh, well, that's good. What a fantastic story. You know what? They wouldn't hold that against you. You know, that's okay. You can be an honorary amputee for the night. If it gets you in front of Kylie Minogue, what's wrong with that?
Honorary amputee. Yeah. I feel so guilty telling you that. But I've told that story a few times.
I love it.
And they had these massive balls that they were throwing around the stadium, these huge beach balls with all the different countries' names on them. and I woke up on level 7 of Stadium Australia on top of one of those balls at about 4 a.m.
Far out.
I think it's the Tonga ball.
Hey, apparently it gets pretty loose at the Paralympics.
Yeah.
Really loose, I heard. Yeah, some stories that I've heard. I've never been to the Paralympics. Unfortunately, they don't have golf. Maybe one day. They'll pop it in there. But I heard that the village is quite rowdy.
They were telling me the people who look after the athletes' village for the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games. Oh, sorry. They look after I'm working at the Commonwealth Games soon, so that's why it was in my head. And the Paralympics, Olympics and the Paralympics, they used more condoms at the Paralympic Games than they do the normal Olympics.
There you go. Some randy Paralympians out there.
It's actually I don't know how to say this without sounding really bad, but it's the special people. Down syndrome people.
Yeah, okay.
They're randy little fuckers.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I have heard that too, but that's another story for sure.
Catching them all over the place. And not that I caught doing that kind of thing, but that was an incredible experience working at the Commonwealth. That was an incredible experience working at the Olympics and the Paralympic Games. And the Commonwealth Games are coming up soon. Are you doing anything with the Comm Games?
No, I'm not. No. I don't really have a lot to do with, sports or Paralympic sports. I've got a lot of friends that have, obviously, circles and things like that, that are people that, do compete and pretty amazing people. Dylan Alcott's another guy that that I bump into from time to time. He's an amazing guy, the wheelchair tennis player and basketballer, I believe he was for a little year. Very inspirational character, but... No, I don't really get involved in sports, so to speak, apart from golf.
Hey, what about your girlfriend? Where'd you guys meet?
Yeah, so we met, we've been together a couple of years now, hoping, maybe some kids in the next few years.
Cool.
I don't know. Yeah, but she's from Alabama, Southern Belle, with a massive smile, and she's gorgeous. Her name's Andrea, and we live together down there in Albert Park, and she's over in the States at the moment, so she couldn't join me for this beautiful weekend up in Hamilton Island. She's stuck, just spoke to her this morning. She's got an 11-hour training day, and she gets one day off a week, and she said there's no shops or anything to go to, and they're stuck in this little room. So I'm like, oh, you poor thing. So I just sent her a whole bunch of pictures of Hamilton Island and the views from my bedroom.
Where'd you guys meet?
Online, actually. We met on Plenty of Fish. Heard of Plenty of Fish before? Yeah. So we got speaking, and interesting. Well, I might share the story with you. It's a bit of a crazy story. So we got together, and she loves to Google, and she knew all about my legs well and truly before I went on the first date. And
no.
And I just and I didn't really. It's not like I'm trying to hide it if someone asks me or anything like that. It's an interesting one, dating, because it's like, well, if people don't want to go on a date with you because you have no legs or something like that, that's okay. That's fine because it's not not really a problem. For me, that's okay. I guess it's a good filter in some ways. And Andrea was just sensational. She we went and had the date, got along like a house on fire. We were chatting the whole night. I dropped her off at her house, gave her a cheeky kiss, and then went home. And then she sent me this absolutely delightful message where she's like, just so you know, because I had long pants, just so you know, I know about your legs, and it doesn't bother me in any way at all. And I thought, oh, what a beautiful message. And I called her, and we started chatting, and ever since then, we've sort of been inseparable. And we, she's just a wonderful person. She is one of the most positive people that I've ever met in my life. She's always smiling, always happy. And that is such a breath of fresh air for me, because there are days, obviously, when it is tough. And you do have your bad days, but she has a way of bringing you out of that, which is wonderful.
Oh, what a lovely girl.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And what's she do for a living?
So she's just over there. Got a new profession now. Oh, well, not a new profession, new job with a company called Applied Medical, where they sell those crazy things. Like, she shows me all the videos. I can't even stomach them. It's like childbirth and things like that, where they insert a ring into the stomach, and then another ring outside. They roll it down so that they can make a, instead of those things that pull apart wounds, what do they call those?
Forceps
or whatever they call them. Instead of that, because it rips, they use this ring now. And then she showed me this thing where they pull a baby's head, and they cut the sack, and they pull the baby out of this double ring hole. And I'm like, wow, that's quite incredible. Made me feel emotional, Mike. I was like, wow.
You're getting clucky.
No.
You're going to start pumping out babies, don't you?
Well, not me, hopefully. So that's what she does for a living. She sells all those products. So she's in surgery. She used to be with another company that sold all those bone plates. So when you bust your arm, Yeah. Stick a plate on and the screws and everything that go in with it. She used to sell them. So
yeah, cool, man.
She enjoys it. She's got a good knowledge of, you know, well, she's really good with sales.
Look at you, you know. Yeah, a bit of adversity when you're 21. Yeah. Sure, you lost your legs, but, you know, you've got this incredible career now. You're traveling all over the world. You're doing talks.
Get to meet famous people like yourself. I remember I was telling Mike the other day that I used to sit up late and listen to him crack gags all night on Big Brother Up Late. I used to giggle the whole time. I thought it was hilarious. And
you were my viewer. I wondered who it was.
That was me, yeah. I was the guy ringing up.
You were the viewer. Yeah. I thought it was a hot chick.
Tell that guy to get his hand off it.
I always had my hand on it. I've made a career out of it. Yeah. Hey, Mike Rolls, you're a true legend, an amazing Australian, and it's been such a privilege and an honour to meet you here this weekend.
Yeah,
I feel like we've forged a friendship here, and we'll get to hang out more and do more stuff down the track, because your story is inspirational and you're changing lives, and it's just such a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you too, Mike. Enjoyed every moment of my time in Hamilton Island, and also looking forward to you know, getting that wonderful golden tonsils down to Melbourne for some reason in the future.
Yeah, man. Likewise. If you're ever in Bondi Beach, I've got a spare room. Come and crash at my place.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Bring the Alabama Slammer with you.
I will. She'll be a bit of a handful. She loves a drink, Andrea. So she's and to party. Yeah, she can certainly outdo me. I'm always... I think we should time to go home, and she's always wanted to kick on. So
yeah, cool, man. Yeah, get you to a Sydney Kings game. She'd love basketball.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being a Yank. Awesome. Thank you, Mike Rolls.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to On The Mic with Mike Goldman. Subscribe, download and review at iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher or your favourite podcasting app. For more, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. This has been another quality podcast production from Bytes.com.